At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Turn that thing
we're
on.
More of like a crash thing. You know that. We're like...
What?
We just start.
The Comedy Store would like you to know that the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are strictly those of the speakers or authors and do not necessarily reflect or represent the views and opinions held by the Comedy Store and its affiliates.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Once in a blue moon, Rick and I will mess around and do like morning radio bullshit. Uh-huh. Like he'll do the voice.
Sure.
Like, and then I'm laugh girl.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So there's always a laugh.
I've been laugh guy before on radio. Yeah,
so
I can
yeah,
do.
Yeah, just automatically do
sure.
laugh girl.
No, I can do laugh guy.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. But all we tell on here is Comedy Store stories. So we make it paid regulars or people that worked here for
yeah.
a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Like Peter Shore and Scotty Shore are in town right now. So I would love to.
Well, aren't they?
Them.
They're like here.
Yeah,
I saw Scotty.
Yeah.
Is Peter here?
I think so. I'll find them. I'll get them. Because.
Yeah, I should have them on mine.
Oh my God, yeah, they're the best.
I don't know about Scotty, but I think Peter I could take.
Scotty's one of the best. Scotty,
I don't know him that well. Like I know Peter a bit, and I know Paulie.
We call,
but like Scotty, like I he seems like a nice guy, but I've never talked to him that
long. Oh, he's so nice. We call him the Good Shore because he tips. Guys,
hey,
Rick Ingram is here. Thank you.
You
so
made
much.
It. Just started.
Sorry
just
about
started.
That all-star traffic, brother.
Dude,
are you upset?
Is that what's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The
look,
game.
Even Rick is like, screw this. Is this in your face?
Is that a Hanes t-shirt?
Mossimo.
Oh.
Nothing but the finest.
I like that color. I've had, I know it's a V-neck, yeah. I used to have a maroon. I was obsessed with maroon t-shirts.
Really?
For real?
For a while, yeah. It was like a color that I was, I always liked the pocket tee. The
okay.
Hanes pocket tee with a flannel shirt over it. That's
a solid look.
It was yeah,
it's a great
it was
a, look.
It was a high school, late high school, and then it came back.
See, I never grew out of what I wore in high school.
Yeah,
I just kept it going.
Good, because it comes back around.
Oh,
it's going
right.
to come back.
Eventually,
around.
I'll get there.
It all just recycled. I was telling him that we do morning radio starts sometimes, or we just jump
always.
Into it.
Yeah.
Okay, always. Now he wants to always do.
But
it.
Now we eased into it without you. There was no drama.
I mean, that's probably better.
I don't know what kind of energy you want.
I
try and just keep it negative energy.
Yeah, I know, Rick.
I know. We have Mark Maron on. How great is that?
That's
this
pretty
is
great.
A big deal. Rick goes, is he really going to do it? I go, I think so.
Yeah, I was like, there's just no way that's happening.
I don't feel like I've talked to Rick in years.
Yeah.
Like, and I used to talk to you all the time, and then like, you know, all of a sudden you just, I don't know, something happened, you grew up, you got...
That's possible.
Got a baby.
You're not here all the time.
Yeah.
You know, bitterly imitating everybody, bitterly imitating everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Those years are over.
Yeah,
I stopped drinking. And,
oh, really?
Yeah.
So no more weird Argus impressions?
Yes.
Oh, we're still doing those.
Yeah.
Come on.
That was mostly based on the fact that I was just hammered all the time. And it was
hammered and mad.
Yeah, it was easy to get away with saying the worst things possible if I was just pretending to be Argus Hamilton.
I loved it. There needs to always be someone at the store carrying that torch.
The negativity torch?
Yeah, the
okay.
full-on bitter negativity torch.
I remember one time Maron told me, I was sitting in the back door just being bitter as fuck.
Perfect.
And he comes up and he goes, hey, the whole bitter thing, no one gives a fuck. And then he walked away. I was like, I don't know how to feel about this right now. Because he's right, but also I feel like you've done a pretty good job with bitterness.
It had to transform into cranky.
Oh, okay.
Like, so now it's just cranky?
Yeah.
It's acceptable.
Aggravated, cranky, neurotic. But like when I was really bitter, because your assumption when you're coming from a bitter place is that if everyone just dug a little deeper in themselves, they'd understand.
We'd all be bitter.
Right.
Yeah.
You assume that. But like after years of doing that, to limited success. I mean, I think I always had, you know, I was interesting enough to not make a living, but at least to stay in the game. You know,
that's
back
where
in
I'm
the
at.
Day.
Oh, I see what you mean.
You know, back in the day.
Got it.
But the bitter bitterness thing, like, you know, it just makes people uncomfortable, and they'll laugh when they're uncomfortable.
Sure.
But, you know, it's not something that you can rely on, or it's not everyone's idea of a night out, certainly.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, that guy's angrier than me, or more right. bitter than I am, so this is
great. Or just like, it's just amplified self-pity after a point. Yeah. Like, and self-pity is never attractive. Like, you know, even back in the day, you remember, like, even when, like, people, like when it was pure anger here all the time, it was like, that's different. It's not, there's a bitterness to it, but even Kennison came from a disposition of it was sort of like it was elevated, you know, kind of like brokenheartedness.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, like it was always like, you know, like he just was like the pain was so great that he snapped. He wasn't bitter.
No. Did you start in New York or here?
I started really like where did I in college in Boston.
Oh, Boston.
A little bit.
Okay.
And you know, I did. I wanted to do it, but I didn't do it much. I started like one summer in Boston when I was maybe a sophomore in college. I did open mics, probably 1984.
Okay.
And I was doing like all the open mics in Boston back when they were just open mics at clubs, and that's what you had to do. And I couldn't. You know, I drank a lot, and I did it for a summer, and then I just kind of put it on a shelf for a couple of years, and then graduated college, and then came directly here. I went home for the summer.
Here. Nice.
I was never here before. Like, I left college, went home for the summer, had a pretty good monkey on my back for blow, and
okay.
I came out here.
Yes.
Yeah, I came out here, and I didn't know really what to do. I was staying in Culver City at a friend of mine's house. We were writing a screenplay, and I thought I auditioned at the Improv. Like, I remember, well, I went over there for an open mic. You remember that guy? What was that guy's name? That little guy that used to be there all the time? Was it Howard? Howard somebody? Well, I can't remember his name, but he was a nasty little guy, and he ran the open mic thing.
He was like the booker?
He wasn't the booker, but he was a comic. I can't remember his name, but he's not around anymore. And then I came here and I did a spot. Where the fuck did I do a spot? It must have been in the OR, like a 3-minute spot. And that was all I did. And then what happened was I was living in Culver City with the dude. We wrote a screenplay. We got into a fight. It was not a good situation.
Oh,
it was Steve Brill who went on to write the Adam Sandler movies. And then he moved his friend Pete Bergen, the other director, when they were just kids. And they set me up down the hall. And at that point, I was doing PA work,
okay,
right? And I wasn't really doing comedy because I didn't know how to get in. I was in Culver City. But I got a gig doing PA work, and I was doing – I did like this one job for the kids' videos, music, and it was at the Circus Vargas, you know, like off season. So we were out there. I was like coked up and getting up early in the morning and dealing with, you know, leopard shit and elephants, and they're shooting these kids singing kids' songs with circus themes. So
story as old as time.
Right?
I just remember there's one night, I've told this story before, where like I was hanging out and the guys who were the clowns for Circus Vargas, you know, they're in the videos, there's two of them, and they're like, you want to come back to our trailer and get high? And I'm like, all right. So we go back to this trailer and the
amazing.
Dude's like about to light a joint, and I'm like, you gotta take the makeup off first, I don't think I can handle it.
I'll be freak out. I don't want to do drugs with actual clowns.
Especially if it's laced and you're like,
oh, the clowns, the worst. But then so I get another PA gig just out of nowhere on something Mitzi's producing, some crazy fucking shit.
Her little shorts that she used to do?
Right. Remember, she had this big idea for some sort of network, so she shot all those shorts.
The Comedy Channel.
Right. Right, and like that was when Barrymore's was failing across the street. So I was here, and Danny Stone was running around sweating because he was fucking her, and like
amazing.
And Becker was around. So like, and then I saw Mitzi, and I'm just supposed to be PA-ing on this thing, and I don't know any of these people. Charlie Barnett,
wow.
I remember I was down there because that's where they were sort of set up in Barrymore's for the production office. I think there was actually some production offices over there, and Charlie Barnett's like, he's like, I need a drink, and I actually remember going behind the bar and just pouring him fucking straight liquor so he could get the edge off, right? But then Mitzi shows up and I walked up to her and I'm like, do you remember me? Like I had just
done
here.
3 minutes.
I did like, yeah, like I did, man, you know, and
best way to approach her. Yep.
Yeah. And she goes, oh yeah, you're funny. Go ask Becker if you can be a doorman. And I'm like, I didn't even know what the fuck that meant. You know, so.
You're like, I want to be a comic, not a doorman.
Right, but like, but I was just happy she remembered me, right? So then I go find Mike, you know, and I'm like, Mitzi just said I could be a doorman. And then, like, right out of the gate, like, Becker's like, we're going to make you head doorman. Oh. And I'm like, I didn't even know that was, like, a nightmare.
Yeah, but the worst.
Yeah, the worst, because you got to do the schedule. And at that time, you know, there was no security. There was just weird Kirk and his sister, yeah, right?
I remember
and,
Kirk.
Right, and Ralphie was the back door guy all the time. Remember Fat Ralph?
Yeah,
pre-Chewy. Ralph was this weird dude that lumbered around, and he always carried a stack of Polaroids of pictures of whores sucking his dick.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that the guy who just died
he
a couple years
away.
Ago?
He did, yeah.
Yeah. So, with the Polaroids in his pocket.
But Argus's speech at that gathering was one of the best I've ever seen at a memorial here.
Yeah.
Where he's like, yeah, Ralph, he was around a long time, and I think we all are thinking the same thing. Why couldn't it have been Johnny Zapp? And then Johnny Zapp stands up super mad. What? This is ridiculous.
Zapp, I remember Zapp doing a Zapp gig with Mark Godier.
I don't remember that.
You don't remember Mark Godier? Mm-hmm. He was this big, tall dude. He had long hair and a beard, and he was around. I heard he became a fisherman. Oh. So I get the head doorman job, and at this point, she's like trying to do a comedy store in like the Sheraton and across the over in the valley,
okay,
like in studios in Universal City. So there's just this little room that they'd set up, and there, who were my door guys? Jay Pope.
I love Jay Pope.
Yeah, Mitch. Who's that angry little Jew? Mitch. I can't remember his fucking name.
I don't know, but I like it.
Rodney Blackman. Remember Rodney? He wasn't a comic, but he did the phones and stuff. New Orleans guy.
Okay.
Great guy. Andy Volver, Kravitz's friend, was here.
I know Kravitz. I remember that.
Who were the other door guys? Like, none of them are really. Mike Jaselka. Remember Mike Jaselka? Mm-hmm. I think he's a lawyer in Cleveland now.
Oh, wow.
But he toured with Sammy for a while. So I get here. So I get this job. I'm the head door guy. I don't have any understanding of this place.
But
the
you don't
mythology.
Have Sam and Carl?
Not They're yet. Not, okay. Here's the weird thing that happened with that. This is how it happened. I don't think I've really thoroughly told this story because it was weird. Like, I didn't know what was up here. I just knew that, like, I had to wear the shirt. And at that time, she wanted us to wear blazers. So I had to buy a blazer. And
oh,
I had
boy.
To buy, like, just a, you know. And
standard the, comic uniform.
Right, yeah. And the comedy store shirt. And right. I had to do the schedule. Christopher Wheel. Like, I didn't know how I was supposed to do spots. I was told that the belly room was for non-paid regulars. But I had to get on a show. I auditioned for the belly room with another fucking door guy. Christopher Wheel, he used to have a banjo that had an applause light in it.
Oh boy!
Wow!
Like he'd push a button and it would say applause, and I was told that
did
I had
it work.
I don't know. Yeah, I I think he went on to become a film director. But I was told that I got to audition for one of these guys. So he made me do a set for him in the belly room, and there was no one there but me and him. And then I was sort of then I was able to work the belly room. John Nikeforis, you remember Nikeforis?
No.
He was around, but not a door guy. His dad was a mortician. He was an interesting
Ooh.
Guy. Todd Lemish.
Todd, I love.
It was here before
Scariest
the
man ever.
Yeah, but before though, before
he was so funny.
When he was just the blow dealer.
He wasn't a blow dealer. He was like a
he
blow
was a
junkie,
doer.
You
yeah.
know. But he be, but before he got mean, like he was really this weird,
so
sweet
funny.
Guy. Yeah, but he was funny because he'd bring Kevin West. He
Kevin
would bring,
West. Terrific.
He would bring us on stage. Todd would do these vignettes. Like, you know, Kevin West was Oswald in the Kennedy shooting. I was John Lennon getting shot. And he was sort of, he'd do other people's material, but he thought he ran the place. You know, and then I met Barris right away because Barris had just gotten past sweeping in his car and sweeping in the back of the main room. And he took me to lunch, you know, and he was like, this is what's going on. It's, you know, he got into my head and he was fucking weird. And then Mark Goldstein talked me into writing with him. Mark Goldstein, that's how fucking naive I was. Goldstein's like, we should write together, and I'm like,
and you did
okay.
It?
Well, I
oh
tried.
My God,
it was.
So
I remember I moved out of Culver City into Crest Hill into Dice's old room. Not originally
the maid's quarter thing.
The green room with the shag car in the bottom.
Yeah,
I was up top first, but then I got Dice's room with its own bathroom.
Yes,
had its own bathroom. But yeah, so I spent one day writing with Goldstein, and he had no ideas. He just had this idea where it's like, I'm Mario, and it's called Hey Mario. Hey Mario is the name of the movie, and he's just me walking down the street going, hey! People going, hey Mario, hey! And that's all he had. Did he die?
That premise could sell still to this day.
That's true.
Yeah. Hey Mario.
He was so fucking nuts. It was like Groundhog Day for me because I started at 93. So
yeah.
I would come here and Danny Stone and Mark would just come in every day, do the same thing, pass me and go do blow in the back and then come
Goldstein
out.
Goldstein was doing blow?
I don't know if he was just hanging out or
no, doing. No, he was just a weird cockeyed, you know, kind of.
Well,
you know.
His eye, yeah, he lost his eye.
No, that was later. He was that always was, a little, yeah, I remember he lost his eye.
I remember Mitzi
eye.
Gave him money for that. He had to get a surgery or something.
Yeah, yeah, that was remember. After me. So, like, so I'm here and, oh, yeah, Andy Lederer's around.
I don't know
like,
that one.
And so I'm kind of excited to be here and, you know, I'm working the, you know, the main room and there was like two or three shows in the main room back then. It was sort of a big time.
It's technically the boom when you're talking
A little
talking
after,
about.
A little after.
A little after.
Yeah,
okay.
It was like, you know, because Roseanne's gone, you know, right. Jim Carrey's gone, Robin's gone, they're all gone. It's, you know, it's approaching Sam's time. Sam and Dice broke the year that I was here, right?
Oh, okay.
So the main room shows would be like, it'd be Dice, Joey Kamen, Jan Hart, Karen Haber, Fleischer, Damon Wayans. Like, you know, just like dudes, you know, Altman.
Was Fleischer
Tim Jones?
Was he
Tim
already Jones. Weird and kind of crazy?
He's always doing the same thing.
Always same
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, always the same thing.
Okay.
And like those were the shows. So like, and Dice was, you know, he hadn't broke yet, but he was solid. Like it was like it was all you could feel was about to happen because it was
character.
So tight. It was so tight. And then Sam would come in late. Like Sam, Monday nights were that was when it all happened because Monday yeah. night it was no cover in any of the rooms.
Wow.
In my recollection. So it's all the freaks would converge. And that was when Sam would do it. Like, so like you could just feel him coming. But I'm getting ahead of myself. When I got here, because I was only here about a year. And when I got here, Sam was out on the road.
Okay.
And Carl had come back. And I didn't know Sam. I'd seen him once and I didn't like him much. I thought it was a gimmick and I didn't give a shit. And I don't know what I was thinking, but oh, Schubert was around, but he wasn't a doorman. He was already in, like, you know, he had already broken his leg. When I met Schubert, he still had a cast on, and I was here when he got the cast off too early, and they had to go. And I was walking with him, and he couldn't walk, and he had to go get it back on, and he never did the physical therapy, and that's why he's fucking gimp.
That's
why
yes.
he limps.
Yeah. Yes.
But that because he wrecked his bike. But he used to be a Dice guy. Dice had guys. Sam had guys. Dice's guys were generally clean, right? You had Hot Tub. You had yeah. You know, had Jimmy. You had Cheesecake. You didn't want to hang around Dice too much because you get a nickname.
A
you know, like,
name.
Here comes Muffin, you yeah. know, whatever.
I was Shermanator.
You yes. were?
And that was 2003 or something, so.
But the thing with Dice Camp and Sam Camp is that Dice, they were all clean and, you know, on the level.
Clean,
they were on drugs.
Weren't on drugs.
Oh, got it. I was
and
like,
the Sam Camp,
wise, yeah.
right.
Sparky, remember Cherbits?
Yeah, Sparky.
I ran Sparky out of here.
Yeah. He was a bitter little fuck.
Yeah, he showed up and everyone
Ricky outbitted him.
Everyone was like, God, this guy's fucking annoying. He was just treated everyone like shit. I was a door guy. And so
yeah.
I was like, hey, go fuck with that guy. I'm like, all right. Yeah. It was like 3 weeks of every time he showed up being like, hey, Sparky's here. Let's piss on him.
Oh,
and
man.
Him being like, hey. Yeah. You should respect me.
He'd do a Sam voice.
Yeah. Like, no one respects
yeah,
you.
Yeah, Sparky was here. Yeah, sure. So okay, so I'm in the kitchen, and Carl comes in, you know, and I'd never seen him before. And I watched him perform, and I was like, this guy's like a performance artist. This is genius.
It's amazing.
It is kind of amazing what
it's
Carl does.
One of my
does.
Favorites.
Yeah, it's something to watch. And back then, you know, but I didn't know Sam really, and I didn't know their relationship, and I didn't know any of that shit. And I introduced myself as a new door guy. He's like, yeah, I was a door guy. We were all door guys. So he's like, you know.
That's
and
I'm pretty
like,
good.
Yeah, you know. Hey, you know and he's like, yeah, you seem good. You seem good. And he's like, here, take this. And he gives me his watch. And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? And so I'm like, thanks. So I thought it was some sort of like, you know, like, all right. So
you're
this
in.
Means, yeah,
you're
right.
Gang.
I got the watch.
Got my colors.
And he's like, Sam, I'm going to want Sam to meet you. And I'm like, all right, okay. You know, but I didn't really know what I was in for, you know, but I'm living in Crest Hill and now I got Carl's watch and, you know, and I'm like, what's happening? You know,
it's all happening.
Right. And then Sam shows up and like, he gets right in you. Like he gets into your being. He's like, you're a new door guy, you know? And I'm like, yeah, he's like, all right. Okay. All right. It's like, we're going to have a talk, you know, that kind of shit. And I'm like, yeah, Carl gave me his watch, you know? So like,
Sam's like, oh, well,
that's amazing.
In that case, I didn't realize you were on the watch already.
Yeah. But the story that most people know about me is that peeing on the bed story. But this is the first time I met Sam. Like, you know, I thought I'd, you know, I could do drugs. You know, I thought I was on the level. Like the first time me and Sam hung out, man, like, you know, it was after, it was probably Monday. Because Sam, you know, once I got into the crew, you know, it was my job to set Cresto up for the party. So he'd give me a couple $100 when he'd go in and do the main room. And I'd go buy liquor, enough to stash. Buy cigarettes. I'd go buy mixers. And I'd go up to the house and I'd just lay it out and wait for the freaks to come. So they would come up Monday night. And we could go till Wednesday sometimes up there.
Yeah.
But it was my, I was that lackey. Like, you know, you ready? You can do it. And I'm like, yeah, man. I go down to Pink Dot and I go down there to the liquor store, 7-Eleven. I'd just be buying, like, I know this is going to go on for a while. So I had to buy liquor that I would hide, because the initial party was always like a bunch of weirdos. But then the hardcore people would always come down to, like, Sam, me, sometimes Carl, and a few other comics that were just sort of like, what is happening here? I don't know. So, but the first time I met Sam, it was great. So we're up at the house, you know, and, you know, he's putting out Coke, you know, and.
Nice.
And I, you know, I had the lobby card picture of the cast of Freaks, and that I initiated that as what we would do Coca. I don't know why we did it off of that, but we did. It was always off of amazing. The picture of the cast of Freaks.
And rightly so.
Right.
It
right.
seems like it makes Perfect. Sense.
So it's just me and Sam, and he's got Coke, and I'm, you know, I'm a Coke guy, so we're doing it, you know. And he's just looking at me going, look me in the eye, Maron. I don't, you know, I don't respect someone who can't look me in the eye. So I'm like looking at Sam.
And, you know, and he's, Jesus.
There's two dudes on below staring at each
that's
other.
That's right. And he's terrifying. Telling me what's up. You know, he's just, I don't remember what he said, but I remember we were doing Coke and I'm looking at him and he's looking at me. And then he's like, you ever burn money, Maron? I'm like, no. He just pulls out money and he's burning money. I realize in retrospect, this is my initiation. This is my brain fuck. You know, like this is how, you know what I mean? Like this is how I'm like, I want to be around this guy.
Yeah, he knows how to party.
That's right.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So what happens, though, like, I don't remember if it was the first or the second time, but it doesn't matter because I don't know him. And he's, like, really arguably probably the biggest star in comedy at this point. Like, he's doing big shows. Like, he hit his first HBO show hadn't happened, but Rodney had happened, and I guess Back to School probably happened, but he hadn't done the HBO special because I was at that party.
Oh, wow.
For the first HBO special at Carl's apartment. That's a funny story. But okay, so we're doing Coke, and it's like 3 a.m, we're out of Coke, and Sam's, like, drinking, and he's, like rocking, you know. He was all like, ugh, it was fucking disaster. He's like, we gotta get Coke. And I'm like, all right, it's the middle of the night, man. He's like, all right, let's go. You had a car? He knew he was too fucked up to drive. I was fucked up, but I'm driving down to Greg's. Remember Greg? The hairdresser?
That's amazing.
Eventually, Sam turned on him. He's like, he's cutting this Coke with Bisquick. It's weird because Greg was one of the Coke dealers around here, but he was like the main guy for a while. He was a hairdresser. He used to work at a salon down on Melrose, but I didn't know him. And we go over to somebody's house. He lived on Crescent Heights. Sam buzzes this buzzer. It's like 3 a.m. He's like, hey, it's me. Let me up. You got Coke? You know, whatever. So we go up. We knock on the door, and this guy comes. He's in a bathrobe. He cracks the door. It's like, what? He's like, got any Coke? It's like, just be cool. My roommate's sleeping, you know. So we go hysterical. In. I'm like, hey, man, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah.
So on the ride.
Yeah. We walk in. We're in his bedroom. And, you know, he's looking for some bindles, right? And Sam is like, yeah, anything to drink? And, like, all he had for some reason was miniatures, right? So he gives Sam, like, a miniature Smirnoff from an airplane. And Sam's just fucking, you know, half passed out on the floor sitting there drinking a miniature. He looked like a giant.
Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, and I'm just standing there, and he gives me the Coke. And then Sam just fucking goes. He passes out. And I'm standing there with this dude I don't know who's in his bathrobe. He gave me the Coke. And Sam's passed out
in his bedroom.
Is this
guy gay?
Nope.
No, straight hairdresser.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And,
it happens.
And I'm like, all right, so I'm gonna split. And he looks at me. He's like, you're not leaving him here. I don't want him to pull a Belushi on me. Get him out of here. Like, that was the care that this guy. That's a good friend,
oh
right?
Oh, my God.
I don't want him to die.
Yeah, he's dying with you.
Oh, I forgot the best part. It's like when we're driving over there, Sam keeps going in and out of consciousness. And at one point, he wakes up and he looks at me. He's like, hey, you could kill me. I don't know you. And I'm like, all right, where are we going? You know, so,
you're in charge here, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I don't know, you could kill me. But then I get Sam up and out, And I drive him back to Crest Hill, and he's too fucked up to party. And I just lay him out on the floor. And, you know, he sleeps on the floor.
You
I do some lines.
Around him?
There was no one else left. It was just,
oh, it's just you two.
Yeah, yeah. And wow. But he used to do that all the time. He liked to sleep on the floor. Like, he would sleep on the floor at Crest Hill a lot. And, like, to the point where I remember having a girl come over. I went to lunch with her, and I brought her back to the house to show her the cool house. And it's just Sam's, like, on the floor. Like, we could just belly down, laying on the floor. I'm like, that's Sam Kennison, big star.
just step over him.
But he slept on the floor at home. It was weird. He'd, like, he would pass out.
He's face down, so he doesn't he choke sleep. On his vomit.
I don't know if it was that plan.
Wow.
But there was a lot of interesting moments, you know. But that was, like, really the first time. And then, like, you know, then over time, I got under his skin, and, you know, shit got bad. But there were some good moments.
Did you go on the road with them? Were you part of
I missed all that. I was fortunate. Like, I, you know, at some point, like, I was always here. I lived in Crest Hill. I'd come down here, and I'd make coffee. I'd listen to CDs in the OR during the day. Like, I was just here. I would drive the Jeep sometimes. Like, it was so bad because we were so fucked up all the time, and I was on no sleep, and she'd make me drive the fucking Jeep, you know?
Oh,
and,
yeah,
like, one time I had
people around.
Well, no, you had to drive, like, people who were going to the airport to go to the dunes, right?
Yeah.
So I remember.
Right. Called the runner.
Oh, yeah. I'm coming. Like, one time I had Mendoza and fucking Campanera in the car, and I was late coming down, and they're waiting for me to get in the Jeep, and there's no gas in it, and I'm sweating, and I'm, like, on an hour's sleep, and I stink, and they're like, what, are you all right? And I'm like, I think so. We'll get there. And they're, oh, it was fucking awful. But, yeah, but fortunately, I had a falling out with them, all of them, before, you know, everyone got sucked in really hard.
Oh.
Like, I lost my mind and left before the Outlaws tour started.
If you want, we can pause this and do it after your set, but if you it's up to you.
Well, I'll go do the set.
We love hearing your stories.
See how I feel.
I'm to have you back. Come back. He don't go until 11:30. I don't go until 12:15.
All right. Okay. I'll come back.
So I'm here. You're amazing.
Back.
Okay. All right. I'm going to hit pause. So welcome
back.
It just seems
hacky to try and make things funny.
To make things work.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah.
Why make it work?
Well, I don't.
Just keep.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't like that one joke that I have, like, that has been working a lot. Like, jokey jokes, they lose the shine for me if they're not part of a longer piece. You know, like that one I was just doing about the walking out of my house.
Yeah.
It's a great joke, but I never do jokes like that. It just came to me. And I love doing it, but I know I'll get tired of it because it just stops. And it's not the style of comedy I do. So like, if you're not going to follow it with, like, a bunch of other jokes like that, if you're not going to be a tell, you know, coming up with one of those jokes is not going to help you, you know, because.
Right.
You get a taste of it, but, you know, you're just going to be like, all right, well, that was a joke.
Sorry about that.
And now I'm going
to
do the talky stuff. Yeah.
Back to who I really am.
Yeah, exactly.
We were talking about before you went out to do your sets, your third set of the night, which was amazing. You were talking about driving. I didn't realize you were saying you were, because we would do the runner stuff here where we had to drive the Comedy Store van around, drive Mitzi around, whatever. But you had to drive comics to Vegas?
To the airport, not to Vegas,
to the
Burbank. Usually, because they had a flight to one of them. I mean, I think the Comedy Store was at the Dunes, wasn't it?
Yes.
So they would go there. I didn't do it too often. I did some driving, but I was mostly door and phones. You know, the driving thing, like, it was too much, and I think I was starting to lose my mind. It was dangerous for me to be driving, because to be up that early was just out of control, because it was becoming...
Still intoxicated, probably.
Yeah, and it was becoming such a freak show up at Crest Hill, like, you know, it was just, because it was Monday nights, it was just a weird time, because that was the night where everything would be crazy.
Yeah.
So we would party from, like, Monday till Wednesday. And you just always feel gross, and it would get weird up there. So, like, we would burn
dark furniture,
like, you know. And then there'd be celebrities around, and, like, you know, sometimes, like, Ted Nugent would come up there, and we weren't allowed to do drugs because Ted Nugent didn't do drugs. And then,
I saw that Kinison, I think it was on A&E documentary, and it was Nugent talking about how he was so mad at Kinison for doing drugs. And I'm like, I guess, I know he's, like, hardcore conservative, but.
Well, he was always
Christian?
He's just a clean guy, but he's an animal. Like, he's a hunter and stuff. But, like, Sam drew in a lot of the porn people were here a lot. Christy Canyon was fucking Todd for a while. And I think she was with Steve Pearl for a while, but I don't know.
Yikes.
And then Samantha Strong. Simona, that was Todd. Like, oh God, she was around. And
Corey Feldman blames hanging with Kinison for his drug addiction.
I remember when that happened. I remember like Corey Feldman was at the house one night. I remember like there were moments that I witnessed because I was the host up there, really. Right. So like I
emceeing the party.
Well, I kind of had to watch, you know, what was going on and make sure no one, you know, got into his face or was weird. And,
sure.
But like, you know, I wasn't a bouncer, but I just sort of like would distract people. But Corey Feldman was up there once, and I remember like I remember the moment because he was like, "Hey, man," and like, you know, and he's like, "Guys, we found this pill. I don't even know what it is." And I remember I just took it, and he was like, "Holy shit, you don't even know what that's going to do." But I knew it wouldn't do that much. Yeah. It was only one pill. Right.
Compared to a bunch of blow.
Yeah, it was pre-ecstasy. What could it have been? It could only have been good.
Right.
A Quaalude. Maybe bring me down a little bit. Yeah. I've never had a connection for Quaaludes or downers. I was always the guy that was fucking up, jerking off, and freaking out. Like, no, like, they all had fucking, I think some of them had dope connections. And some of them had Quaalude connections, but I never had it. Then there was the, oh man, I don't even want to say his name because he actually reached out to me on Facebook. The dealer, the guy that was in house for a while. Do you remember him?
There was a few. So
the Arab.
I only heard stories of. Oh, yeah. I don't think I've ever met.
Yeah, he was intense, man. He was intense, man.
But by the time Arab. I got here, he was gone. There was a new regime.
I know. Who was the guy with the Chewy?
Chewy.
Yeah, Chewy.
Odd job.
The funniest thing I ever heard was when they did the big bust after I left. They busted Mitchell Walters because he was a suspect. Because they thought he was the kingpin because they had pictures with him with all the other dealers.
Genius. Poor motherfucker.
That's what I heard.
Poor Mitchell.
I only know him from his headshot hanging up where he's dressed
a
like
few
a
times.
I didn't know him that well. He did the area codes and he
still does it.
Yeah. I know he emailed me a couple times because I've had Alan Stevens on, I've had Carl on, I've had Jimmy on. I've had the surrounding characters of that time. And like I think he emailed me sort of like I got some stories. But he's on the East Coast.
Yeah. Oh, totally. He's still in Long Island. So when did you get passed here, technically? I mean, because you were working the door.
Well,
but...
like, yeah, that was a weird story because, like, I was working the door and then, you know, things just started to get weird. You know, like, there was one time with the Coke dealer, though, man. I remember, I was kind of fragile for this shit. Like, and I did drugs through college, but I always sort of had this weird promise to myself that, you know, if I ever, like, lost my mind, as if I would know, yeah, I would get out. And like
just
I was
feeling crazy.
No, I was losing it. Like I had gotten myself into drugs, you know, cocaine psychosis. And it started off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was started off kind of, it was gnarly because, you know, being in this place with the sort of mythology of it and being that absorbed in here when you live at this place. And then like I was seeing, you know, demons and, you know, seeing, you know, truths that people didn't see. I thought Hollywood was involved. I had this large mystical conspiracy going. I was hearing voices in my head. Like I got pretty fucked up. But everything ended for me. Here at very dramatically. But there was one night where that guy, that drug dealer in particular, Sammy brought him on the road with him because he was one of those guys that could like go out into the night and come back with
return
shit.
With what was
yeah,
needed.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And one night we ran out of blow and he was gonna go out. And I'm like, "Can I go with you, man?" He's like, "I don't know, man." I'm like, "I'll drive."
Oh, okay. I got you.
Yeah, yeah.
I just got to see how this happens.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Show me the tricks, magician.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So like we drive into, and I don't remember where we drove, but I parked in front of a place, and he went into that place. But before he went in, he was like, "You got a magazine in here or something?" I'm like, "I do." My car was a mess. So he rips out a page of a magazine, and he goes into the house, and he comes back out with this giant folded bindle, and there's like a gotta be a half ounce of coke in there.
Oh my
and he opens
God.
It up, and like he just like I saw him like just scoop like Scarface style, like with his two fingers and go, and I was like, "Can I do that?"
The newbie wanting to get.
Yeah, this is what I came for.
I'm the driver. I have to be paid.
Let me double finger that.
Yeah, I did it. And I was like, "This is great." And then he just started hand weighing bindles. He was ripping corners off of the magazine, just hand weighing with his fingers, just slapping, like eyeballing, grams and half grams.
Genius.
That
goes over well.
That was a big night.
How you close your eyes and you're like, "That was a big night."
He puts himself back there in that spot.
Yeah.
Well, God, it was like, it was menacing, man. It just got menacing.
That was your drug of choice. Did you do like mushrooms and things like that too?
We did mushrooms once or twice. You know, like I was always afraid of losing my shit. But there was one time we had a pretty fun time. We did it during the day. Me and Rodney, John Nikeforis. I don't know if there was someone else involved. But we did some mushrooms up at the house and hung out. And then we had to come down here to this fucking dark castle.
Yeah.
We're doing sets half loopy. Like I remember when Nikeforis did it, he was on mushrooms, he was on stage, and he used to do this horrible joke where he would take the, it was like after some big hotel fire, and he would take it was kind of clever, he'd take the wrapper off his cigarettes, and he'd crinkle it into the microphone.
Oh my God, Todd used to do that for campfire talks.
That's right.
That's where he got it.
That's where he got it.
Aww, yeah, I thought Todd was so goddamn clever.
No, Todd was a little sticky. But
Todd borrowed.
Yeah, it was like an impression of this horrible fire. Nikeforis would be like, do that, and he'd go, he'd just scream over the...
Over the crackle.
Yeah.
Because it was a perfect crackle. It sounded great. Todd used to do it all the time.
Yeah, yeah. God damn.
I never saw that gentleman do it, but oh well.
I don't know what happened to that guy. Yeah, I mean, he was an interesting guy. But things kept getting progressively worse because I made some missteps, with the crew. I don't feel like telling the whole goddamn
thing. You don't have to.
Pee on the bed story.
It's fairly famous, so
yeah,
they
yeah.
can find that
I
one.
They can
I'm
find
sure.
it. Can find I told it on anywhere. Rogan's, and I told it on mine. I told it, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But so you would go on stage high.
You know, you just kind of dealt
with it. What's your worst experience doing that?
But when you do drugs, though, regularly,
you kind of
level.
Really
feel high.
I guess
yeah.
you're right. I stink. I went once half drunk, and that was it.
Yeah, we were all kind of fucked up, but we weren't getting that much stage time because at that time... You know, we couldn't go on in the R really unless it was like a freak thing, like unless there was nobody.
Right.
And, you know, what we had to do then is if we wanted to perform, we had to pull people up to the belly room who were leaving the other shows. So, like, if there was like an early show in the main room, two or three shows on Saturday, people leaving, we'd be like, you want more comedy? And we'd have to drag them up there. Like, you know, it was very hard to get an audience. So we were up there performing for each other a lot for 8-9 people, but we were sort of stuck up there. So, like, the there wasn't a lot hanging in the balance if we were fucked up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So you weren't doing that in front of a real audience. You were doing it in
front
of
your
friends.
There weren't Hollywood execs. And,
right.
Yeah.
You know, it was crazy over the house because Tamayo Otsuki lived up there, right?
Oh, yeah.
And Sam used to date her, and they were broken up by the time I got here. But that's one of the reasons he would party up there. Like, he would fucking get fucked up. And then just go up to her bedroom door and just pound it. You just hear him going, Tamayo! Tamayo!
They're her fall from grace.
I
go
love
from
Tamayo.
Kinison to Mickey Rubens.
Oh. I don't know what happened.
She was dating this homeless guy.
He wasn't homeless, but he did open mic and he was just fucking lunatic. He was friends with that Gaylord Dingler guy.
These are all like clowns that came later, and I thought they were homeless because I would wait on them, you know.
Yeah.
And then one night, and Mickey would pay me. Like I couldn't give him free drinks. Mitzi would flip out, but he would pay me when I was waiting tables. And one time, he handed me a black card, and I was like, "What the fuck?
Wow!
I thought this guy was homeless,
right?"
He had money.
He would go on stage in the open mic,
probably.
And he would turn on Riders on the Storm. Have the guy turn it on for the open mic, and then he
fucking
would just
psycho.
The atmosphere on Mars is red.
Oh, good, one of those guys.
And it wasn't he wasn't trying to be clever. He was just a fucking nut.
Oh boy, man. Don used to run that fucking potluck, you know, back in the
Don
day.
Harris, yeah. Yes. When and I got like, here, he was running it.
I think Mickey was a ding donger briefly. So
yeah, well, that's a whole other thing. I've never really witnessed that sort of organized bullying of the underclass. You know?
It's amazing that you say it like that because we say it and people look at us like we're nuts. I'm like, no, it's out and out bullying. Like,
my friend goes, so he's a retard shepherd? I was like, kind of.
to an extent.
Just like he caught maybe 5 minutes and then just was like, can we go? Like, yeah. He's a retard shepherd?
Yeah. They used to run him and Todd. They used to have the hook in it. And like, it's just like, it's always so sad because, you know, I'd be up at the house. So I'd come down during the day to just fucking like hang out here.
There's nothing to do. Yeah.
I'd walk to there used to be a Thai place. Like, I always thought that the hot and sour Thai soup would, you know, solve all my problems. So I'd walk down the hill and there was a Thai food place right over there. And but like when they'd line up for potluck, there'd just be guys in chef's hats and wearing garbage bags and stuff. You're like, what's happening?
Yeah, the same thing early 2000s when I showed up, and they're all getting spots, and I'm drawing nothing. Like 3 weeks in a row, just like
There are people so different now without Mitzi.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was. We were always in terror of her coming down,
which was kind of a good thing to an extent.
Well, I mean, right now, like, I don't like. I for some reason, like, they're you know, I as being a guy that is like mystically and intrinsically connected to this place, like, I the darkness is not tangible right now, and I you know I don't know
I like
why.
That.
And like, you know, I
that's a good thing though.
No,
right?
It's a good thing, yeah. But like, I don't know why it's coinciding with her slowly losing complete brain capacity.
Right. Her power over the building, her force field of evil is lifted.
Or just whatever she was invited. She was like, you know, kind of a, she liked the fact that we were all out of our minds and yeah. that she, you know, had this control over these wayward, you know, fucked up, you know, emotionally
damaged,
stilted,
yeah.
angry gypsy people.
Yeah.
She
yeah.
liked being our horrible mother.
The den mother of the fucking lunatics.
Yeah, I remember one time she's like, you're funny, you're a poet, you should wear a scarf. And like, you know, so I was wearing a scarf for a month.
You did it?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I thought everyone has the Mitzi's wardrobe suggestion. When Louis Anderson told that story about how Mitzi told him he should only perform in a sweater, and so he went and bought sweaters, and I was just like, what am I doing?
I love that she has that kind of control over people. I remember like Andrew Dice and Eddie Griffin got into a fight.
Yeah.
And it got ugly, and she came in, and she was like, not even driving herself at this point.
Yeah.
So this isn't full Mitzi. This is Mitzi declining and health declining. And she walked in, sat in the back, and they scoured like little nervous kids that they were going to get in trouble by Mitzi.
Yeah.
And then she called for them both to come in, and they both, like little schoolboys, ran and sat real politely and waited to talk. And I was like, what the fuck is happening right now?
Yeah, that's an evil emperor right
this
there.
This was 2000. Like,
yeah.
What
both
are you
of those guys
of?
Are already
yeah,
well
hilarious.
Off.
But it was so funny to see. And I was just like, oh boy, this woman's insane.
Oh,
I love it.
We used to scramble around panicking.
But there's nothing like that
she'd
now.
Show up in the JAG and you'd be like, who's sitting in her booth? Who put that person in the booth?
I rarely used to say that, like, when Argus was on, if Mitzi was in there, he'd be like, come on, let's go in the OR and pretend Argus is funny so Mitzi likes us. I was like, that's so mean but accurate.
Yeah. You'd always just like try to catch her eye or like wonder if she knew you and like
sure, they're doing cartwheels around it. How was your showcase for her? Like your real showcase?
I don't remember it really. I you know, like eventually, like the thing was is like, you know, she just knew I was like up there at Crest Hill. You know, like Becker used to tell me that she knew, you know, what I was up to. And like, you know, we were like out of control. And she got a real kick out of the fact that Sam kicked down the door and peed on my bed. And like, she, you know, like, you know, she like, she just liked the chaos. But
yeah,
she got mad because she would buy furniture for that house up there. Like, you know, patio furniture. And we get fucked up and break it. And there was one night, it had a gas fireplace where we burned an entire rattan couch. Like, you know,
it's amazing that you got away with that. We had one party in 98, I think it was, or 99, and we put a beer cooler on the table and it warped it, and she lost her fucking
mind. In Crest Hill?
Yeah.
No, like I don't know what, like I don't know how we got away with it. It's because like, Sam was into it.
Oh, probably.
And like, and also like, I don't think she really knew. Like once we got busted, you know, it was bad. You know, it was a bad scene because she thought she was doing nice stuff for us. You know, and we were just up there like fucking like, oh, you know, like Todd, the sound guy, lived up there. Remember Todd? He was married. His wife was pregnant. It was a fucking nightmare. I remember one night, like, you know, the guy, the groundskeeper, this little Mexican guy. Like, I remember one night I was, like, all coked up, and his wife used to clean the house. And I was, like, you know, just up and, you know, probably in the middle of some three-hour masturbation session. Like, and she walks in, this nice Mexican lady. I'm like, hey, what's up?
What are you doing?
You looking at a party?
She's terrified, and I had to go see Mitzi or Becker about it. Like, you know, like, you scared the... And I'm like, well, I don't know. What do you want from me?
That's amazing.
Why are you sending someone to clean that place?
Yeah.
You shouldn't send civilians up there ever.
Yeah.
You know,
she's a normal person. How dare you?
But, you know, she walked in on me, you know, But like, you know, Becker used to call us the Manson family. He used to be worried about me. He's like, what are you doing up there? Why are you hanging out with them people? I'm like, they come up to the house. I live in the house.
Yeah, where are you supposed to go?
There's no escape.
Yeah.
How did you get out?
I lost my mind. But
Well, right. You
I'm trying to think of one other good, like another story like that. We used to go up in the fucking hallways. Like, I just kept pushing Sam because it was the only thing I could do to protect myself. Like, I knew when he'd lose his mind.
Okay.
Like 2 days in, like he would, there'd be no impulse control. And I would just like, you know, I was just like, and I knew that he had to, like, he had to live up to this thing, you know, like,
yeah.
I remember one time we're all sitting around and like, you know, fucking Barry Sobel was there and like, like
shivers down my spine.
But like everybody was there, and like I'm like, "Hey Sam, why don't we burn some money?" And he's like, "You know, because
just fucking with him."
Yeah, and he had to do it.
You got
to
do it. Yeah. Well, you got enough money to burn, right?
Yeah, right.
Man?
Yeah, right.
You're
that kind of shit.
Off.
Yeah, that kind of shit.
Terrible.
Like one night, like everyone was sitting around. It was like 2 or 3 days in, and I just put on AC/DC's "Highway to Hell," and Sam just like he was fucking this weird. What, I don't know if she was a porno person, but she was trouble. And like, you know, there's like six people sitting at the table. I put on like "Beating Around the Bush" on "Highway to Hell" or something. It was in the living room. It was my stereo, and he just like just stood up and threw this chick on the table and started dry-balling her and making out, and everyone scattered. And I'm just sitting there going, "Hee, I did that with a record," you know, like,
mind control.
I'm getting back at the monster.
I thought it was so weird when I watched that the documentary thing.
It couldn't have gotten into the real shit.
No, they didn't.
Because Bill did it.
Did
right?
you do it? Yeah, but his brother did
the
it.
Thing
didn't
that
ask
was,
me.
Yeah, the
I
thing,
don't think that. Maybe they did, and I was like, nah,
the thing know. That was weird about it was like, I've just heard all these stories from people here, and the way they presented it was just like Sam was this poor guy that got bullied, and sometimes he had to be mean because he was the victim. And I was like, that's not really how I heard a lot of the stories, but
no, he was like he was vindictive, and he was like, you know, he's like he was like a megalomaniacal narcissist guy, and he was like, and he had some power, and he also had this charisma that was very engaging. But you know, he knew he was fucking with people. He hated Barris for the long time.
Oh yeah,
like him. Like for some reason, Barris just rubbed him the wrong fucking way.
Hilarious.
He could see through him, probably.
Well, they're both bullies.
Oh yeah, true that too. Yeah, yeah.
Two biggest bullies like, on the block, so, fighting it out.
They were kind of, but Don was nobody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. And like,
what was Sobel doing at the?
He was around
partying.
Yeah, but he didn't show up that often. He couldn't believe we were burning money. You know, I like.
Yeah. I would be the same, by the way. I'd be like, what? You're burning money?
There's some weird nights.
I'd be
up
trying
there,
to
man.
Stomp it out.
I used to tell this horrible story about that. About like one night, like we're up there, and like this guy, Dave, you know, like there was this photographer who took the great picture of me and Sam. He's still around. He's okay now. I actually ran into Greg, too, up in Portland. Greg, the hairdresser. He started
right.
as some sort of sneaker business. He's fine. He's like, you know.
Thank God. You always wonder, how do they get out? Do they get out alive? Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people don't. I remember like being out in front of the Improv using a payphone. I just saw this like freak walking down the street, like exuding bad energy. And as he came closer, it was like his Danny Stone. And I'm like, what's up? And he's like, oh, you don't know what's going on. You got a dollar? I'm like, okay.
Oh, Jesus. So I saw one of the ding-dongers from when I first started here using a payphone by the newsstand down here on Sunset. It was, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. I had my mustache at the time. As I walked up, he was just talking nonsensically into a payphone, and he stopped and looked at me, and he was like, hey, I know you. I'm like, oh, yeah, how's it going, man? He's like, nice mustache. It makes your face not look so stupid. And I was like, all right, thanks, man. And then he goes, you got $20?
Like, yeah. No. Jesus, it went
20.
Up.
Straight to 20. Barton, it was Blue Iris's son.
Oh,
that
yeah.
crazy
of course
lunatic.
He asked for 20. Yeah, sick. We had a lot of maniacs, but like our fun didn't seem as fun as yours. Like the difference between that boom, you said you got here at the end of it, but this, what do you think of technically this boom now?
I don't know what the kids are doing, you know.
I mean what do you mean you're part of the kids, if you will? I mean, you're part of this boom.
Yeah, but I don't, like, you know, I'm not that guy anymore, so I hope they're having a good time.
No, I don't even mean the party wise. I mean the where.
Well, I'm just happy, like, you know,
right
that
now.
Like after, you know, coming full circle, you know coming back here, like this, what ultimately would happen outside of, like, so like, you know, I can go out and smoke my cigar. Like what happened was, I came back here. I left because I lost my mind.
Right.
And, you know, the Arab, the Palestinian drug dealer.
Okay.
You know, I was out in the parking lot. I was out in the parking lot just freaking out. And, you know, Jimmy, like, came out and I was breaking glasses. And, you know, it was like, you know, I got kicked out of the group. And I was just, like, falling, you know, and I was completely psychotic, you know, listening to voices in my head. And, you know, like, I remember going up to him, going like, man, I don't know what to do, man. They're all pissed off at me. And, like, I'm fucking, like, you know, I just, like, you know. And he just looked at me and goes, you got to get out of here. You got to go and do your own thing. You got
to
get out of here.
That's amazing.
The drug dealer.
For a drug dealer
to tell you
that.
To go, yeah. And, like, I was like, yeah. Because all he ever really said was, it's only rock and roll, man. Like, he wasn't a big talker. So
it's only rock and roll. Just like a full-on drug dealer cliche.
Yeah.
Listen, man, it's all part of the party.
He was pretty okay. Smooth for a guy that did. He looked always looked pretty good. Yeah, so I left. I paid all my debts. I gave away whatever didn't fit in my car. I said goodbye to the people that were important. I paid off drug dealers, and I left. And I drove to Tucson, where my brother was, and he was, you know, graduating college. So we ended up partying for a couple more days, and then I went and checked into my first rehab. You know, but the problem was, like, I didn't stay sober. Obviously, that was 1988, maybe, but I couldn't shake the psychosis. Like, it took me a long time to not feel this place. As being the place
pulling
that it
you
is.
To the darkness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just had the, like, I'd come back here to Hollywood and over the years I'd be like, oh, it's, I can't, it's still there. Like, I'd come here and I'd be like, I know what's going on here. You know, like, okay.
I hear you building.
Exactly. Right, yeah. Man. So, like, but by the time I moved out here, here's how I became a regular. It was actually, so I left, I ran away. In, you know, maybe 87, 88. So I graduated college 86, came out here. So 88, I think, I went to rehab in 88, maybe. Is that possible? Somewhere around there. but what happened was, you know, I went and started over in Boston, and I started working professionally in 1988, you know, doing one-nighters and doing that opening work and, you know, becoming a working comic. And I worked in... I was in Boston for years, and then I moved to New York, and then I moved to San Francisco, you know, sort of building the act and, you know, becoming a comic. And then in 1995, I was working. I got a TV show on Comedy Central that was a short attention span theater. You know, I had opportunities here and there, but what happened was I was in Aspen at the Comedy Festival in, like, 95. So I hadn't really come back here, you know, for years, you know, for 5 or 6 years. Like, I remember coming back here once and seeing the dealer, you know.
That's brutal that you came back and saw him.
But Sam was still here, and I felt like I needed closure, you know. And it was, you know, before Sam died, you know. And, you know, I remember seeing him, the dealer, and I'm like, can I go back and say hi or talk to him? Or he's like, I don't know, man. I don't think it'd be a good idea.
Ooh.
And I'm like, you're probably right. All right. You know. And then when he finally died, when I heard he died, it was sort of like, you know, I was bitter enough to be like, yeah, all right.
Yeah. Hey.
Now I got a grave.
I win, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Checkmate, Sam.
So mean.
I still feel the bitterness. So.
Yeah.
And when he died, I was like, I was like 12 or something when he died. Yeah. And I still eat shit, buddy.
Yeah. Who wins?
It's my time now. Yeah.
Well, he had fallen so far, you know, by the time he died.
Yeah.
But, you know, but over time, I've let all that shit go. But the weird thing was, so 95, I'm at the Aspen Comedy Festival covering it for Comedy Central. And Mitzi's there.
I remember that.
Right. So... And I hadn't really checked in with her since I left in 87, 88. Like, I really didn't spend much time here. Because every time I come back, it'd be freaky. And I remember I walked up to her. I go, Mitzi, it's me, Mark Maron. Remember, I was a door guy? You know, and she's like, I remember you. And I'm like, you're great.
Real slow.
And I go, like, can I be a paid regular? And she's like, yeah, just tell Becker you can work at the club. So, like, there was 95 I got passed.
So it was never a showcase. It was you walking up to her.
Well, she knew me. She remembered.
All That's amazing, though.
You know, I was here. Yeah. I mean, I definitely was part of the fabric of this place.
I
but
for sure,
and you're covering.
You.
Yeah, you're covering a festival for Comedy Central. So
yeah, but some she clout. That's where she like she knew I was part of the place. Yeah. She always knew I was part of the place.
Of course.
So like she passed me, but I wasn't really living here or anything. But I passed, and then when I came back, by the time I got back here in 2002, Tommy was here, and she was out of her mind already. Really, right?
Yeah,
2003. Mm-hmm. So I was coming around, and Tommy's like, "Oh yeah, man, everyone says good things about you, and you know, Mitzi really wants you to work here again." I'm like, "Huh?" Yeah, so
I'm talking to her right now, Mark. Okay, she's
true,
interested.
Well, he used to say that to me. It's like I was with her, and she really wants you to have the fourth spot. I'm like, dude, is that
she
like
said
that?
The fourth spot?
Yeah, it's like it's like I thought it was like the Bates house. Like, is she even alive? I mean,
I'm still convinced that's what was going on. It was a weekend at Bernie's up there.
For sure.
Tommy's pulling the one. What do you think, Mitzi? Okay. Well, we'll put two black guys in there.
Wait
now.
A minute. She wouldn't do that.
She said this about you. I heard the kid from Kansas is getting a little big for his britches. That's what she said.
But yeah. He let me, you know, he was good to me, and he seemed to be a real, like, sort of appendage of the old style. Like, you know, he seemed to
he
you
tried
know, be,
to keep it alive.
Yeah.
For sure.
Right. So then I'm kind of working here, but I'm trying to get in with the alt shit, and, like I'm not really, because I'm not a made guy. You know, like, you know, I have notoriety here. Like, and people had read my book was going around, and that section I wrote on the book. But, like, I'm not a big comic, you know, and I didn't know if I could really work here. I know I was passed. So, you know, Tommy was working me, but no one was here then. It was weird.
Yeah,
I have weird
dead.
Memories of it. You know, I'm trying to do the alt rooms, and it was like it was weird. And I didn't get my name on the wall until fucking Duncan did it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a part of that same
because it was like 10 years where they didn't
yeah.
And Duncan
it.
Was booking, and I'm like, and he loved me, and I'm like, dude, like, can you get me on the wall? And he's like, yeah, I'm gonna do it. Everyone kind of talks nasally, I guess, with me. All my impressions are like, all
but
right,
they,
man.
Me
does.
Too.
Yeah. He does a good Duncan too, don't he?
Come on, bro. It's fun. Dude.
So mean.
Mitzi wants you to be your runner, man. Congrats. Congrats. Everyone says it's the worst job. Oh, all right, man. I thought I'd try. It was like, dude, set me up.
Yeah.
So he put me on the wall.
Yeah, because she couldn't afford to have them paint names on the wall, so she didn't do it.
You know, there was
time.
A guy that used to do it.
Yeah, he's Freeman. He still does it. Oh, it's still his
was,
company.
But there was another guy that used to do all the repairs and painting around. His picture's on the wall up there. Greg Hilbers.
Oh, yeah.
Greg
no,
Hilbers.
Hilbers. The guy with the camouflage mustache and the acorn haircut.
Yeah. He used to be the guy that would paint.
I always wondered who he is.
He painted.
Like, who is this guy?
He was a
Mitzi's
comic.
Favorite, but he wasn't like he wasn't a paid. I mean, I guess she made him a paid regular, but he wasn't like the big comic. He never became a big comic, but he was her handyman.
I got my name on the wall because Kirk Fox wanted his up there so badly, he paid for 80 names to be painted on the wall.
Really?
No shit. Mitzi wouldn't paint names, and Kirk was like, "What if I pay for mine?" She was like, "No." He's like, "What if I pay for everyone's?"
Okay.
She's like, "Okay."
That worked.
So I mean, I had to bring a check for like $800 and something
Jesus.
To fucking pay for all the names for like 12 years to go up on the building.
That's great.
I was like,
I offered to do it for a while. She just didn't. She wanted him to do it. She wanted it that style, but she couldn't afford it, so she just stopped it.
Wow.
So the Kirk got his up there.
Kirk is so
excited.
And
you got yours up there.
So like for me, like the fact that that this place is popular again, that it's some point, you know, we all sort of, you know, tried to make that happen, you know, like when Brenton started the Twitter and like, you know, and we all started to take ownership of this place.
But truly, your guys' podcast and stuff like that is what
you talk about.
Laying out the history of the place.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the only place that has a history and it's authentic. And like, I'm just like, it took me a long time to get over my fear of the OR and the main room.
Completely get, yeah.
Like when I was back in 2002, I was terrified still. Like, I, you know, I couldn't believe I was working those rooms because there was such a fuck put on my brain about them.
Yeah.
Like earning it and shit. And I hadn't, I didn't really do those rooms until 2000, until Tommy started working me.
Yeah.
So it was I had to overcome all that. It was like visiting the abuser.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Sure. Oh, God.
God, he looks so eerie.
He is eerie.
Just a haunting glow from behind the glass.
Oh, he's always going to come in.
No, he went that way. He gave me the finger and he went that way.
So I'm just thrilled that, I don't give a shit. You know, and I'm not afraid.
Yeah, and you own
and
it.
That,
it's amazing.
And that, it's the only part. I don't do any alt rooms anymore. I just work here.
Okay.
You know, so, like, I was always, like, you know, comedy club comic. You know, I just had to, you know, keep getting the stage time.
Yeah.
So, and like, now to come full circle and be like, no, I only work at the store.
That's funny. So you don't do the improv or Laugh Factory or any of that? No. Good for you.
I can't stand the fucking improv. I hope they go. I just can't stand them. Because they did such crimes against comedy.
That is true, too. But I feel like right now Mitzi just went like this a little bit. She just pumped her fist in the air for you saying that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but it's true. You're right. They did a lot of bad things.
When it was
comics.
Bad times and they iced all the headliners, they did flat rated everybody, $1,500 no matter who you are. 200 travel for weeks. And like they used to fucking, you know, they'd always say how much they like me, but they'd only give me Fallout weeks, you know. And it, like they, and like one time I had my own night there, like before they fixed it up, like they let me have a headline night. And Mancia came in and bumped me on my night, like, and did, and I left. He was on stage for like a half hour, 45 minutes, and I was supposed to headline. I'm like, I'm fucking leaving.
Oh, my
that's fucking
God.
Wrong.
Good
it's
for
my
you.
Name out there. And I never really worked there again.
Good
like
for you.
I just like I would sometimes work there. Friends had shows there that wanted me to do it, but I wouldn't even do that anymore because I just think that the organization, you know, post Bud and even like, it was never a good room.
Got it. Yeah.
Was it?
I don't think. I mean, they almost never gave me spots, but every time I went there, it felt like this. It was like performing at the Applebee's of comedy clubs.
But even the old room, the ceilings were too high. It was always high pressure. Maybe it was me. I don't know. But I don't have any love for that place, and I don't have much love for Jamie either. So those audiences there, I don't even know what they're doing over at the Improv. I just don't need it.
And that's good. That's great because you have your own thing here.
I'll go to the Ice House if I need to work on long sets.
Nice. Yeah, yeah.
You know, if I need to do an hour, I can do it there.
But you can do an hour here in the Belly Room. Just ask for a night. People do it all the time.
I probably could.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I didn't really think about
that. Rogan does it. Diaz does it. They all work on their hours. If they're filming something like rather quickly, they're like, let me just run it one more time.
Right.
They'll just rent out the Belly Room. It's a great space to do that. And you've been coming up to the Belly Room and working there.
Yeah, yeah. So you were here when I was here?
A little bit, in 93. I started in 93, so you kind of
came back sometimes.
And then
I wonder what
went away
those
again.
Waitresses, huh?
Yeah, there's a lot of them, huh? But I remember when you came back, like, early 90s, and it was like Mark Price, is that right?
Yeah, Skippy?
Yeah, Skippy, and all those guys were still hanging out. Schubert would come, Carl LeBove, and I mean, it was my favorite time. I would laugh, but I never, like, hung out. Because I was engaged, so I never like hung out with the comics that way. I would hang out with the door guys, of course, because that was, you know, who I related to more.
Yeah.
But then you disappeared again and then came back in 2002.
Right. Well, 92, 93, I was sort of in San Francisco a bit.
And but 95, 90, mid-90s?
And then 94, I moved back to New York. I moved back here. In 2002.
Yeah, I just remember you coming in.
Yeah, I would come to LA. You know when I came? Before I got sober.
You were still
Bob
drinking,
Baker.
Definitely. Oh, yes. Okay. That was the other guy. Yes, that was the other crew.
Bob Baker would be my drug guy because he could get drugs.
Yes.
Is that the dude who stole money from
the credit
manager
cards.
Or
yes.
something?
Yes.
He's bad
he robbed
news.
Us blind.
That's all I've ever heard about
he
him.
He robbed the store blind.
But I had a deal with I had a deal, development deal, and like I had money. And I remember like, because I only came in sometimes, I needed to do coke because I was married and I was unhappy and I couldn't do coke in where I lived. So when I come out here, I wanted to get fucked up. And I remember giving Bob Baker, I gave him $500. I said, that's so you don't fuck me.
And
just take that money. Eventually he did, but not bad. But not bad.
Not bad.
Yeah, there's a
now Rick has to do a spot.
All right.
All right. So did you have anything to plug? I mean, amazing. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
I got dates in Europe and I got the Ice House in March. You can go to WTFpod.com/tour.
Yes, and
thanks,
check out his podcast because he's amazing. He's the king of podcasts.
Oh, that's sweet.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
I'm Eleanor Kerrigan.
Rick Ingram
is going on stage. Thank you.